This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Screen Talk with me, Dan Clark. Now, I never know how to start this show. I feel like I say the same thing every time. Hello and welcome to Screen Talk. But I just can't think of any other way of saying it. Like, how else do you say hello? I don't think hi is right. Hi and welcome to... That feels too informal.
You're a hello guy.
Yeah, I'm a hello. Welcome to Screen Talk. What's happening? Welcome to...
Hiya!
Yeah, no, that's not me. What's a guan? What's happening?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah? No. Bonjour. Hola. I could try and do it. That just makes me sound like a dick as well. So today we have two great guests. You've heard our first. James Gill is back with us. This is becoming a regular thing, James. You're somehow beating my commitment phobia by, you know, seeing you on a regular basis.
This feels right. Yeah. I don't want to see other people.
Let's go steady. James will be giving us a little bit of film news in a second. From his expertise as the film editor of Shortlist, I feel like I have to say
very
that every
good.
Time.
Very good. No, it keeps like the boss
also
happy.
A comedian. How's the comedy nights going, James?
It's a constant source of anxiety and worry.
But they're going good.
Yeah.
I mean, they are brilliant nights. And
always be comedy.
Always be comedy. Look,
tickets.
Little plug.
Tickets plug. Invariably available.
And we also have the wonderful Ashlyn B, who I hope I'm pronouncing that right. She has actually bollocked me once before for saying that wrong. But we'll find out in a minute whether I'm saying it right. She is a very, very funny comedian. Comedienne? What's the PC?
Comedian.
Comedian.
I can swear on this show, yeah. One of the absolute fucking greats.
This is my song to kick off the show. This is from the film Little Miss Sunshine. It's Sufjan Stevens with Chicago. I dare you not to be utterly uplifted by this song.
We have
fills me with such joy, that song. That song. Do you, are you a fan of Little Miss Sunshine?
Yeah, very much so. And I think it was the first time I saw Steve Carell in a non-hilarious role, and he was... It's a really beautiful performance that he gives in that film.
The weird thing is I remember watching it, and the very first shot you see him, he's in a wheelchair in the mental hospital, and there's something in his eyes, and you go, oh, okay, this guy's got... He hasn't even spoken yet, and you just know he's got something else.
He's so good,
going
isn't he?
On. He's so good.
Have you seen the sketch he did before he was famous, and it's waiters who... waiters who feel sick at the sight of food.
No.
It's a sketch he did on the Dana Carvey show, which got axed very quickly. It was a really good show. So anyway, check it out, listeners.
I will. Check it out. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the directing duo, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. They've got a film that I think they're in production at the moment, which is about... It's called Battle of the Sexes, which is about former tennis champ Bobby Riggs. And they had this match prove whether men and women were equally as good on the tennis pitch. Do we call it a pitch?
Court.
It is a pitch. Courts, yeah. That's why I don't do a sports show, right?
You should.
Tennis course.
You should for the all tennis the wrong course. Reasons.
I'm really looking forward. That, again, it's Steve Carell playing Billie Jean, Bobby Riggs. And Billie Jean King is played by Emma Stone. I think it's going to be a good one.
That'll be good. Do you want to know the outcome of the match? That's the worst spoiler I can give.
No, I know the outcome.
Okay, fine.
But then they did a rematch. They did two.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they did.
Right.
Anyway, that's a good one. What news do you have? What news do you bring with you on your travels, James?
Well, the big talking point this morning is the Ghostbusters trailer.
Oh, God, again.
And because a new trailer has come out.
Yeah, there's been three now, right?
Have there been three?
I think there was a teaser,
then trailer one, then trailer two.
Mm-hmm.
And the levels of vitriol that are getting thrown at this film are now becoming... maybe I shouldn't say unacceptable, because you'd say people are entitled to an opinion, but I will say I do think it is... a matter of sexism.
Well, really?
Yes.
So, like, what are the comments aimed directly at the characters being
some
women?
Some of the comments... I mean, all right, part of my homework, I do I trawl the internet, I'll do social media,
on the tube here.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, if I lose signal, I am screwed. Yeah. But, some of the vitriol on Twitter, as you would expect, I guess, is over the top. But I do think... I mean, this cast is incredible. You're talking about, regardless of gender, you're talking about four awesome comedians and comedy actresses.
Yep.
Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones is an incredible stand-up. Kate McKinnon is wonderful on SNL. So I do firmly believe that if this was a cast, and I'm picking these names out of random, I'm picking, like, cool comedians / actors, if it was, say, Oscar Isaac, Jay Farrow, Chris Pratt, maybe Will Ferrell to keep the SNL connection there. I think if it was those four, you would not have the same level of bile that you've got thrown at this movie.
Okay.
And Paul Feig, I mean, crikey, the dude knows what he's doing. Bridesmaids is one of the best comedies of recent years. So I really hope that this movie is
awesome. Can I pose a question to
you? Yes.
Is it maybe just because the trailers aren't very good?
That new trailer made me laugh.
Did it?
Yeah.
My thing is, right, I'm excited about seeing these guys, because I agree with you, they're all brilliant comedians. But I have to say, in all the trailers I've seen, I haven't been blown away. I don't sit there going, oh, this looks shit, or why are they doing this? But it hasn't blown me away, and surely a trailer... You know, sometimes for its faults, uses all the best bits, right?
I remember the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. There was some real backlash against when that came out.
See, I loved that,
but there was that is a fact that some people were really critical of the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, saying the same sort of thing. Oh, you should be showing off how awesome the movie is, and then of course that film may be the greatest superhero. It's certainly one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. So what I would say is, let's not get too carried away with the trailer. And I still thought the bit where the ghost is on Leslie Jones's shoulders and someone takes the selfie and Leslie Jones just goes, really? I mean, that made me laugh out loud.
I think it's also, for me, on a personal level, I just find the look of it, the colour schemes, the palettes, it just isn't to my taste.
I guess that's Paul Feig also doing his own thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, what else have you heard about this last week?
The Mail are reporting that Daniel Craig has allegedly turned down £68 million, not dollars, to do two more Bond films. So
is he officially not doing
it? It's not official yet. I mean, I spoke with, I'm just going to drop this name, Clang, Mark Strong, a few weeks ago, and those two are good mates, and Strong was pretty certain that Craig had hung up his Walter PPK.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Craig will not be back. I just say, I think Craig has been just a wonderful Bond. If he is to leave, just awesome. Particularly Skyfall. I mean, that's... my God. I know some people like to knock that film. Oh, it's not a proper Bond movie. It's a...
I loved it.
It's a minor masterpiece.
And I'm not one of these, oh, Bond has to be more funny or Bond has to be more serious. I just thought all round it was
just a great
movie.
It was
a film that worked.
The most recent
made $1 billion.
Yeah, it did all right. The most recent Bond movie, they did try to be more overtly Bond. There was more moments of comedy and, you know.
You were lucky enough to meet with Oscar. You had a meeting with Oscar Isaac.
So yes, Oscar.
I have a bit of a man crush.
Well,
on
I was going to say. Well, you like me, have a bit of a man crush on Oscar Isaac, and that chat with him only made me want to leave my wife and daughter for him even more. He is as cool and as lovely and as intelligent and as thoughtful as you would ever imagine. So it was a joy, and it was cool. He talked about how he's doing Hamlet once he's done the next Star Wars. He said how there's going to be more.
A film version or
no,
theatre?
He will be on the stage in New York.
Wonderful.
He also said Poe Dameron was one of the highlights of one of many highlights of The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. and he said that there will be more Poe in the next one, which is what you want to hear. But he obviously was talking about X-Men Apocalypse as well. So, I can safely report that Oscar Isaac is as lovely as you would hope he is.
Well, one of my favourite films of the last 5 years, which didn't seem to do amazingly in terms of box office or buzz or whatever, but was Inside Llewyn Davis. I think I related to it a little bit too much, but it was just a beautiful, beautiful film. And he was so funny in it. As someone that is not really known as a comedy actor, he's just so brilliant in it. Have you seen Inside
Llewyn? I've not seen Inside Llewyn.
Oh, well, watch it.
It's on Amazon Prime. I've got no excuse.
Yeah, got no excuse. It's a beautiful film. Probably my favourite Coen Brothers films of their last four or five films, I think.
The final bit of news, there is the teaser trailer for the new Star Trek TV show was premiered at a CBS event yesterday, and it reveals practically nothing.
It just looks like a screensaver.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
New, that's all it is.
New heroes, new crews, new villains, new worlds. That's what the tagline is.
Which we probably could have guessed anyway. Where do you stand on all this? We're living in an age where original ideas and original content is really difficult to get out there, both on TV and film. Everything is existing IP, as they call it, intellectual property. So names that either are famous books or remakes of old films or series based on films.
Another example to back you up, just this morning it's come out that Dwayne The Rock Johnson, he has signed a deal, it's getting made. They're bringing a new Robert Ludlum character to life. So obviously the Bourne franchise is safe to say that's done all right. So they've taken another Ludlum character.
Wouldn't it be great if The Rock played Jason Bourne?
Yes. That's a reboot I would get behind. Yeah. I think everyone loves The Rock, don't they?
But where Jason Bourne is really good at wrestling.
The climax is at SummerSlam. I'd watch that.
He has to get into a... He's like, some guy comes to attack him. He's like, wait a minute. And he has to dress up in his costume.
But no, you're right. It does appear that original ideas are...
Spider-Man is living proof that they reboot it 2 years after the previous franchise has ended that quickly. It used to be that like 10 years would go by and they go, hey, maybe we should redo.
Longer sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, 30, 40 years. But 2 years, I mean, we'll look back on that surely when we're older and go, that was mental, wasn't it?
Yeah. 17 Spider-Man films in 4 years.
However, that said, the new Spider-Man was awesome in Civil War, and I very much look forward to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Something I'm very excited about, and you've had the privilege of seeing, is the new Shane Black movie.
It is awesome. I went in with high expectations and my expectations were exceeded.
For people that don't know, this is Shane Black, who obviously most famously wrote the Lethal Weapon first and second film, I think.
Yeah, I think he did a draft of the second one. I think then someone may have
tinkered with it in a bad way. And he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is a brilliant film, which obviously led him to doing Iron Man 3. And now,
Hang on, who worked on it?
A friend of mine worked on it. Co-wrote it.
That's one for the regulars.
And has lovely stories about Shane Black. And he is now got this film with Ryan Gosling, Russell Crowe. It's a 70s private detective movie, a caper, if you will. And the trailer is so fucking good.
It's so funny.
I can't wait to see this.
The film is really funny.
Oh, good.
And Russell Crowe's wonderful. I mean, LA Confidential is one of my all-time favourite films. And Crowe in this is fantastic. However, Ryan Gosling, I mean, wow.
Well, there's that bit where he's in the toilet with his trousers around in the trailer. And the slapstick comedy of that is so... It's just perfect. It's like, wow, you can do slapstick comedy. How?
It's a beautiful scene.
You're an annoyingly talented man.
He's an annoyingly talented man. But at least he's not good looking. Oh, no, he's the most gorgeous man who ever lived. It's wonderful. And his ability to do physical comedy and comedy in general. There's one scene in a hotel room, I won't spoil it, that is one of the finest scenes I've seen in recent years. The nice guys gets two thumbs up from me.
Good. That's Ebert, isn't it? I think you've nicked their ratings.
They weren't mine.
Something I wanted to chat to you about, James. The other day I was I was watching an interview with Rob Reiner.
Yes.
And it sort of occurred to me, chatting to my girlfriend, because she was like, what films has he directed? And I was like, oh, you know, he's done a couple of really good films. And I started listing them. And as I was listing them, I'm going, no, hang on. He's not done a couple of great films. He's done at least, I would say, 6 or 7, what I would call, personally, classic films.
So I will read out his streak that he had from 84 onwards, right? This is Spinal Tap, 1984.
Yeah,
which for a lot of people, is the greatest comedy
of all time. Yep.
I mean, I would say Planes, Trains, but it's not about me
right
now.
It's in the top five, definitely.
Yeah, sure thing. I just said Sure Thing. His next film was 1985's The Sure Thing.
With John Cusack.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
86,
brilliant film.
Stand By Me, the film that Reiner regards as his masterpiece.
And it is a masterpiece,
I think.
It's small.
Beautiful.
Because, you know, it's about kids and it's quite sweet, but it's... People often think of masterpiece as in The Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes,
like
has to be a sweeping epic.
Yeah, exactly. But it isn't.
It's a beautiful
mini masterpiece.
I'll tell you what else is a masterpiece. 1987's The Princess Bride.
Because it belongs to 1987.
Do you not think it's aged?
No.
I'm with you.
Very good. I love The Princess Bride. How can you not love it? It is so funny.
Mandy Patinkin's performance, particular. I mean, it's just
all of them. Mel Smith is in it.
Yeah, he is.
But all the comedy greats of the time.
Apparently, Billy Crystal was so funny in it that Rob Reiner had to leave the room and stand somewhere else because he was laughing so hard at what Billy Crystal was doing.
Love it. I have that all the time with you, don't you?
Yes.
You have to leave the room.
This is take 12. Yeah. When Harry Met Sally, 1989.
Well, I mean, it's...
Contender for greatest rom-com of all time.
Well, in my opinion, it's the greatest rom-com of all time.
So which rom-com actually, I love? The Wedding Singer, Sandler, Barrymore.
Yeah.
Underrated.
Michael
Barrymore.
Yeah. I think When Harry Met Sally is a perfect film.
Yeah.
I've watched it recently. Beat for beat, it is perfect. There isn't a dull...
I'm getting shivers. The two of them are so perfect in it.
So good.
The scene where he's doing the pecan pie and she looks over to Rob Reiner... As if to say, is this for real? And he has to tell her, you got to keep with it, and it stays in the movie.
Oh, it's so good. And Reiner actually says himself that he can't believe his mum, who delivers the line, I'll have what she's having. He's like, it's great because it's now in the like top 20 lines of all time from all movies. So you have like, you know...
Here's looking at you, kid.
Here's looking at
I'll
you,
be
kid.
Back. The name's Bond, James Bond. I'll have what she's having.
And it's spoken by his mum. He loves that fact, and so do I. So then what did he do in 1990?
Incredible. Misery!
Oh my God.
Chilling, terrifying. Directed Kathy Bates to a Best Actress Oscar. So Dan and I were chatting last night about Reiner, and the dude... So my initial reaction
was... We haven't finished yet.
We're not finished. But your point was he doesn't get the credit he deserves, and my initial comeback was, it's because it's comedy. These aren't comedies. These are, you know... Then after Misery in 1990, he followed that up with A Few Good Men, 1992. Again, another classic line. You can't handle the truth. Okay, we'll skip over North, 1994. Hey, he's only human. Yeah. And then American President, 1995.
Which you haven't seen, I've seen, is a really, really good film. It's sort of a precursor to The West Wing in many ways. But that run, that's like, how many is that? 6? That's 7? That's about 8 amazing films. So my question is, why is Rob Reiner never mentioned when people are talking about the great directors?
I don't know.
Is it because he doesn't write his films? Is it because...
I'll tell you what it might be.
He skips genres?
It might be because he's not a great... By his own choice, I imagine. He's not an amazing self-publicist in the way that, say, a Scorsese or a Tarantino... Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't describe him as a personality director. He's not coming out and giving zinging one-liners.
Well, you say that, but he's also a brilliant actor. Amazing in Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah. Amazing in Bullets Over Broadway. He was a writer. He wrote on loads of TV shows in the
60s. He co-wrote the first episode of Happy Days.
Yes.
And he was in one of the biggest American sitcoms of all time, All in the Family.
So he's got all the like ingredients of someone that we should be considered an all-time great. But for some... I feel this way, like, Steven Spielberg, for about the first 15 years of his career, was not considered an auteur. Because he made popcorn movies, yep. You could say, mainstream films, family films. He didn't write. I think the only film he's ever written was Close Encounters, which arguably is one of his best. But it wasn't until Schindler's List that people went, oh, he's a master film. He's a an alter.
Before Schindler's List, he was like Johnny Popcorn, wasn't he?
Well, he was Disney.
Yeah.
You know, but he's... And I do think that when people don't make films like Scorsese makes gritty, dark... film with themes that are challenging and dare to push the envelope, that I think that's when people are immediately considered, you know, like masterful filmmakers.
So how do we get the ball rolling for Rob Reiner? The campaign starts here.
That's
the
question.
Guy's got something like 3 movies in the American Film Institute's top 100. So, I mean, on paper, he ticks every single box in terms of being an icon, but yet for whatever reason, when you have those pub conversations or with your housemates or whatever, Reiner probably isn't going to come up, is he?
I don't know. So Charlie Chaplin didn't win an Oscar.
He won an honorary Oscar.
Honorary one.
If you've not seen the YouTube clip of him winning...
Yeah,
of him,
yeah.
I mean,
it's amazing.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever... You know, you hear the word bravo and people shouting bravo, but I've never actually seen it before. And then Chaplin receives the Oscar. It's... If you don't roll a tear watching that, I mean,
we've got to bring Bravo back in, haven't we?
People are actually shouting, Bravo! I think I was shouting it, watching it on YouTube. It's joyous. But no, Chaplin never won an Oscar.
Did Hitchcock?
No, never won an Oscar.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe Rob
Reiner's in good company.
He's in good company. He's in a few good men company.
Yes!
No, that was terrible. I love A Few Good Men. Again, it's like, because it's quite mainstream, it had Cruise in it. And
Cruise is awesome.
You sort of forget that it's how good it is.
Sure.
People don't go, the all-time greats. But anyway, my love for Rob Reiner is apparent. It's very clear.
Sometimes when you have these discussions, you have like a for and against, but that was just me and you going, Rob Reiner is amazing!
Is there anyone... I mean, I've been thinking, Adam is our producer, stood next to me. Should we get people to tweet in or email opinions on things? We probably should. He's just nodding.
It's not the most confident nod I've ever seen.
No.
Yay, if you like.
Well, I think we should. Like, if there's anyone that for some reason doesn't think Rob Reiner's a good director, and I'm not talking about recent years because that's not fair.
Everyone's allowed a blip.
That run, I just think it's phenomenal. Spinal Tap, as you say, is one of the all-time great comedies. And to finish off and round off this section, James, I think it's only right that we play a song by the legendary Spinal Tap, don't you?
Yes, yes, please.
Can you guess which one I'm going to play?
No!
Okay. Well, James, thank you as always.
Thank you, my friend.
It's always a pleasure. I'll probably see you very soon. Thanks. And this is Spinal Tap. From the film, This Is Spinal Tap, this is Big Bottom.
Yes!
Meow.
Wow. What amazing drum work from the Spinal Tap. A little bit of bagpipe at the end there. Aisling.
Yes, Dan.
Maybe you can help me with this. I've seen movies, right?
You know?
Yeah, I've seen movies. We talk about them here.
Cool.
There are a lot of films, as you know, being Irish yourself, lot of people in the New York of America love to say they're Irish.
Yes.
Even though their grandma was Irish 17 generations ago.
Yeah, but that can I say shit stinks? That doesn't wear off. It's like a mushroom on a tree. Cut it off, but it keeps growing back.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you say that like it's something you can't help.
Yes, I don't think you can help being Irish. I think it kind of sits in your blood. Also, there's recently...
It's like Guinness, isn't it?
Until the next morning, it doesn't really... there's been recent studies that show things like starvation pass through the DNA of people. So in general, people who've come from backgrounds where their parents have been starved or anything like that, it sits in your DNA and kind of trickles down. Yeah.
There's been scientific...
So it kind of passes on. So similarly, I think with like... especially if things are overbearing things like cultural or religious or something like that. Like in Ireland, people are obsessed with buying houses and land and owning land.
Yep.
And the idea of needing to kind of give an up yours to the past where our land was taken away from us. Like Irish people in general, that's what kind of almost caused a recession, this kind of obsession of owning your own property and land. And the same with like... they say in China, people are kind of obsessed with meat because there was this giant... this is not filmy at all, is it?
It's good.
It's bang off brand for the podcast. But that there was this obsession of eating meat all the time because they were starved for so long and none of the Western world knew about this big famine that happened in China.
But do American, Irish and... what am I trying to say? Ancestors? No.
Descendants,
yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Do they talk about the famine if it didn't happen to them?
I think it's more, so a lot of the people who went over would have been people who helped build America and were fleeing, hunger.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is something you can flee.
they heard about all the hamburgers. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We got to get a New York City. But I think the biggest thing is the effect of the Catholic Church. It's rare in any country of the world where there is one religion. Mm-hmm. Like still, in a recent census, 96% of Ireland were Catholic in this modern day age. And the other 14% were ghosts. I've heard about the ghost community.
So at the end of that track, they were playing bagpipes, which I've always associated with Scotland.
Scotland, yeah.
But in a lot of films about New York cops, when a cop dies and all the cops go to the funeral and they're all Irish, they play bagpipes.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering where that comes from.
I think maybe a group of Irish people had one Scottish friend when America started.
And it passed down.
All of his sons since has...
They did a genre mashup on the way to New York.
It was like that Run DMC song versus Master J.
Or like Naina Cherry and Youssou N'Dour. They were mixing different cultures. But they did it on the boat to New York. So when they got there, everyone was like, oh, bagpipes are Irish, right?
Exactly. And then they were like, is that a second?
So, Aisling, I once said your name live on stage and you corrected me. It is pronounced Aisling, right?
It felt like if I was to have spared your feelings there and I had to change my name forever because you'd said it wrong, it felt disingenuous. So I did have to, correct it.
What did I say back then? Can you remember?
Oh, I think you said, Saoirse Ronan or something like that. Some other monstrosity.
No, I said, where does your name come from?
Ireland.
Yeah, I know that bit, but the B
I'm
is not your...
I'm very sassy this morning. Yeah. I told you I had...
You're annoyed because we took a photo, aren't you? That's what
I
it
am.
Is.
So,
you were on your way to the gym and you went, oh, I'll stop off and do a podcast.
Yes.
And you had no idea, because podcasts are traditionally an audio-only format.
Exactly.
You were like,
I think it's fair enough. I was not on my way to the gym, but I have dressed as if I was on my way out of the gym. I was told last night the address of this podcast.
Yeah.
I arrived here today in my crappy clothes so I could then walk home so I could get a bit of exercise out of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I arrive here, I'm told suddenly it's about films, which I can tell you right now I know nothing about. So this is going to be gold.
Film
chat.
And television.
Okay, and television. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Which
well,
I know you didn't have when you were
young.
We can
chat about MasterChef.
We can.
And then they want to take a photo of me in my sweaty clothes, like I don't have a soul or a sense of self.
This is what happens when you don't let your agent do the booking.
Yeah, I said Dan, who asked me through Facebook if I wanted to do his podcast.
I forgot that I had your actual telephone number. But if your agent had done this, they would have been demanding like hotel for overnight stay because it was at a ridiculously early time in the morning.
Yeah,
and
like 10 a.m.
Yeah, so I had to do it direct.
Oh, God, you're so
cheeky. Yeah, your name. You're not... This isn't your birth name, is it? Aisling B.
Aisling is, yeah. Aisling is the Gaelic for an Irish dream or a vision. And it was this woman who was in Irish poetry as a person who would come and save Ireland from the wrath and tyranny of Britain. So, but Aisling actually just never turned up. So they were like, right. Oh, well, we just have
Do
to
Do you feel
up
like you're living up
tyranny.
To that?
No, I really like Britain. I really love English people. So she is a bit of a Judas as well. I think that's a new footnote on top of the Irish meaning. And then B was my father's name was Brian, and my real name is Aisling O'Sullivan. But there was already an Aisling O'Sullivan on the list.
What
of
are the
Irish
bloody
actors.
Chances?
Really high in Ireland. O'Sullivan, yeah, really high. So I always went by Aisling B O'Sullivan. But like, you can't be called Judy Mary Dench and go, oh no, I'm the other Judy. So I had to drop off the O'Sullivan bit.
I would have thought in England that having that name as an actress would mean you probably wouldn't be like my name's
she
Dan. Clark, right?
Yeah.
There's no other Dan Clarks. Not really.
That's
I mean,
so
there
surprising.
Are, but that when
it's
I started,
a really boring name.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You've actually really hit on an insecurity of mine that I've had for the last 20 years.
Really, that your name's boring.
I never liked my name, but never had the courage because I come from a sort of working class family and background where if you change your name, that's pretentious.
Like Alonzo Clark down the East End.
Yeah. Or if I like a one like Bono or something. If I was called, I don't know.
What would you have chosen as a moniker?
Well, I don't know what I would have chosen because I just didn't have the courage to do it. But I do remember at school, weirdly, when you had to write your name at the top of a paper, I was so embarrassed of my ordinary name and wanted to be different and stand out that I wrote made up like Daniel Sylvester Antonio Clark. And people believed me because why would you make that up? Why would you be that much? And 7-year-olds believe what you tell them.
Surely he can't be a prick this young. It must be his real name.
But I was a prick that young. I started at a very young age.
Dan Clark is a really solid, memorable name.
It is.
It's a really solid name. It's not embarrassing. It's not like you're called Bill. You know, it's like, well, that would be ridiculous.
Well, you say that, but because I bet you have to especially on the phone when you're calling up, you know, Virgin Media or whoever you're with, and like, you have to re-say your name and spell it. But I've had that. I go Dan. I go Darren. No, Dan. Don. No, it's, I mean, how easy.
Surely nobody be called Dan Clark.
Exactly. So where did you grow up in Ireland?
I grew up in Kildare, which is a very horsey area.
Horsey.
It is horsey.
As in there's horses or people have sore throats?
My mother was a jockey. My father was a horse vet. Everyone in the town was into horse breeding. We breed some of the most famous racehorses around the world. There's lots of like... Arab-funded stables there, which make some of the best racehorses in the world. So, yeah, so you laugh, but I will not make fun of one of Ireland's biggest...
Horse towns. That sounds like the Wild
West. It's like a five-horse town is the town I came from.
So you must have had an existential crisis when you realised you weren't interested in horses.
Yes, it was actually.
Like,
my mother.
What else is there?
It's my mother's greatest sadness is that I'm not interested in horses.
Is it really?
Yeah, at 4 months of age, I was put up on a horse and held there to see if I'd like take to it. You know, like in Twilight. This is the sort of movies I'm into, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to
Twilight's
the jungle.
Great. I like the first Twilight.
So you know when like the wolf imprints on the baby and it goes kind of I will never not let you
is this in the first one?
Maybe the third one. I don't know. They all have. Okay. They're all set in the same house.
They're all
that
the
vampires,
yeah.
for some reason, are able to afford the rent for.
you can make a killing with PAs as a vampire.
Yeah, exactly. I could. So the wolf guy imprints on the new baby, and when a wolf imprints on something, it means it will always be together, like the way crows mate for life.
Yeah.
And so I think my mother was trying to force me to imprint on a horse and go, you will always love ponies. But instead I was like, nah, not for me. And I just wanted to stay indoors and watch television.
In this day and age, that would be considered abuse, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it would.
For a parent to do that. So yeah. I'll have a little chat with her. Where you grew up, was there much culture or popular culture in the sense of, you go and see stuff, or was it just TV?
In terms of television, it's very interesting. So I've been living in England 10 years now, and I miss a huge swathe of cultural references that some people have, and some people in Ireland do have. But I grew up with only two television stations, which was RTE and Network 2, And everyone in the country had those two same stations. And then some people had The Box, which was how you got Channel 4 and BBC.
Is that like a Sky thing?
Yeah, kind of now to be the equivalent of a Sky box. But at the time, it only gave you like the other television station. So some people in Ireland who had The Box, and normally people who lived in towns could get it easier than people who lived out in the countryside because the trees were too tall near my house where we were, so we couldn't get the reception for it. But they would have known who Jimmy Savile was, or who, all these, like, unfortunately. Yeah. Whereas I got off scot-free.
Can I just ask, I'm not going to ask you your age, but what era
18.
Are we talking?
18? I am 18. But frankly, I remember back as far as the 80s because of my witchy ways. So 80s and early 90s.
Okay.
But what's interesting about Ireland, and this is why gigging there is interesting, is you can say the tiniest smidgen of a reference and everyone gets it, because it's very rare to have most people be from, it used to be quite a monocultural country, in that everyone's kind of from Catholic Ireland with mostly two television stations growing up, and everyone has this exact same frame of reference as if everyone's from the same town. Mm-hmm. And that's why you get, I think, the stereotype of Irish people always getting along well and understanding each other. It's because there's only 4.5 million people in the country, mm-hmm. yet we have this sort of loudness of a culture and this... very, like I say, monoculture.
Like the country is like a town.
Yeah, very much so, because we were all given the same, there was kind of two newspapers, two mm-hmm. government parties, and they're both pretty much the same.
That must have been amazing in a way.
It kind of is now. I get very fond of it because when I do gigs, like I did this charity gig at the London Irish Centre, which I do a lot of kind of fundraising for, and it was myself, David O'Doherty, and a bando man who I'm not sure if you know them.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did this, like, I called it the Big Dishco. Mm-hmm. And the amount of sort of my era of emigrants coming over and second generation who knew exactly what all the references were, and it was so glorious to have this one little room where everyone between the ages of 18 and 40 got every reference, except for the English people who are looking around going, what are these mad people up to? And I don't think you do have that in the UK. There'll be certain things like Ant and Dec that everyone will know about, but then there'll be other little shows and pockets and genres, whereas we were kind of forced to watch everything.
And how does that affect things like politics and propaganda? You know, like if there's such a small bandwidth for like putting out messages or creating subcultures.
Yeah.
Does stuff get through the net when there's only
now
two
it
channels?
Does. What's very interesting is seeing people who are now, who are under 24 or 25, mm-hmm. because they've grown up with the Skybox. They've grown up watching stuff on YouTube. They've grown up knowing comedians. You can have your own culture on your iPad beside your parents who are watching the TV now, which is the same in Britain. Whereas up until maybe 7-8 years ago, you had to watch what was on TV that your parents were watching. Yeah. So you kind of grew up with the references, and your parents would know what you're watching, and you would know what they're watching, whether it was boring or not. Whereas now you can have your own tiny world. You can have five different worlds in a house of five people where everyone's watching and having their own interests, which can be good, but you also...
Which sounds like here 15 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. But
and what about the cinema? Was there a cinema in where you lived?
Yeah, but the joke was always like, oh my God, guys, anytime soon, Jaws 1 is going to come to the town. What was interesting is the town I'm from is very horsey, but also there's an army barracks in it. And everyone in my class either had family who were involved with the horse racing industry or fathers who were abroad doing peacekeeping forces.
Yeah.
And most of the fathers were in the Lebanon. And in the Lebanon, they used to get videos that were sent to them of movies that were only out in America to entertain the troops. So when we used to be so excited about people's father's coming back and bringing like Beethoven's seconds back that we could watch at birthday parties. Like, it was a big thing. Yeah. Whose father would bring back a video from the Lebanon.
Wow.
And we used to watch like, oh yeah, things like all that kind of era of movies, like Back to the Futures, those sort of like those kind of movies that we'd see mm-hmm. before they'd come out in America. And it was just like this pocket of like movie going.
So what was the comedy that you grew up watching then? Was, did you get all the British stuff?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I still, to this day, only since I've gotten in, only since I've been working in comedy, and especially working in comedy as a stand-up, which is really only the last 5.5 years, I've only started to know big people. I didn't know who any of the big Americans were. The only person I knew was Billy Connolly. The three references I had were Billy Connolly, Tommy Tiernan, and Deirdre O'Kane.
Mm-hmm.
And Deirdre O'Kane and Tommy Tiernan were on the TV in Ireland all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was 50% men, 50% women, as far as I was concerned. That's how comedy worked.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone looked like me. They had pale white skin, brown hair. You were a boy or a woman, and you talked anecdotally about stories and people you knew, and that was stand-up. So,
which is exactly your style as well.
Which is
right,
basically, yeah.
Yeah,
and it's a very Irish style.
It's funny,
style.
Actually. I hadn't really thought about that, but there is a Tommy Tiernan-esque...
Really? Oh my God, I'd take that.
Yeah, definitely. Storytelling and sort of going into the detail, which... In fact, I remember seeing you at...
That's what I like to watch as well.
Yeah.
And I don't watch much comedy. It's not my hobby. Like, MasterChef is my hobby. So I have to really go and watch stuff.
Well, that's good. I think that's healthy, actually. But because then you're more interested in life rather than just obsessed
Maybe,
with your
yeah.
own...
I mean, then there's all sorts of great things. Like, say, James Gill there. James mm-hmm. runs an amazing
Which we plug almost
night.
Every week.
Oh, really? Yeah. Always Be Comedy. Please go find it online.
But it is a brilliant... It is
it
one
really
of the best
is,
ones in
but
London.
It's so, and he's such a joyful compere, but he is obsessed with comedy. He loves comedy. Sarah Pascoe, another example, mm-hmm. has always loved comedy. She watches Would I Lie to You to chill out.
Yeah.
I watch anything but something to do with
I've
work
I've become
to chill
like
out.
That. I used to be obsessed with comedy.
Really?
Then it turned me bitter. Then I decided I like watching things about pottery and I'm
the
obsessed
great
with
British
Rick,
sewing
yeah,
bee.
Well, no, I'm obsessed with Rick Stein's travel food shows at the moment.
See,
they
I only like cooking
so
in a competitive environment. So
oh, really?
I like when someone's going to lose because of the fondant. That's
not
how
someone's
like.
Going to win. That just says everything
yeah,
about you.
Yeah,
you like
yeah,
it
yeah.
when someone's going to lose. That's
like,
why you watch the Olympics. I can't wait to see people lose.
Yeah, I want to see most people lose. That's what I want.
Everyone but that the 1%. So does that mean that you got into comedy before you knew much about comedy?
Yeah, I've always... like.
Did you just go, I think I'm funny? I don't really know the history and craft of comedy, but...
See, I was one of those kids, to be honest, I'd love to say, oh, I really thought I was going to be a tennis player. Mm. I've been obsessed with making people laugh since I could speak. I love it. I love it so much.
But you were an actress right before you did?
Yes, like professionally before doing stand-up.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
like all my life, like it's our currency and our family. And mm-hmm. I think in our country, it's not. It's like, we're not like, oh, the Irish are very attractive people, just like Brazil. You know, that's not what people say. So the big currency in Ireland
is... It's a sweeping generalisation.
Absolutely sweeping, but unfortunately
I'm offended, as a non-Irish person.
But it's the giant currency is, can you tell a story or make people laugh, and are you not stingy? So generosity and engaging people are the two bit. That's how you'll be judged mm-hmm. on your funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
So on your funeral, yeah, at your funeral.
And is it a stereotype to say that, like, you know, the pub raconteur, the guy telling or woman telling stories?
No, I don't think so. I think that's genuinely really rewarded. I think that's what people and what I love in people. I love funny people, and I mostly surround myself by really funny people or people who love to join in and laugh. Like, they're the sort of people I like surrounding myself with. I think there is like a strain of comedians who I think are dying out who hate other funny people.
Mm-hmm.
They like winning and
mm-hmm.
They like winning a conversation rather than making a great night.
Well, to be
out of a load of conversations,
yeah,
which
and
is how I like to.
I used to run a night and.
I've done your night. I did your night.
You did. You did like a slight revival. I did it. I did it originally from like 2006 to 2010 when I did a lot more stand up. And
I did the Beatles on the Rooftop.
You did. Yeah, yeah. And because I never loved the gigging circuit, and it's I do like watching some panel shows, but I'm not a big fan because of that element. Because of that, when it feels like everyone, it's a competition, even though it isn't a competition, but just that
if
sometimes.
If you're sitting in a chair and every time you say something, you're worried about your career or how you'll make the edit.
Yeah.
you'll probably do really well in the edit, but the show won't have been a joy.
Yeah, yeah.
The joyful panel shows, and I think it's really changing now, the joyful panel shows are the ones where it's a yes and environment, which is something you say a lot in improvisation, yeah. Which is where you throw an idea out into the air, someone picks it up and goes, yes, and something else. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, you've just got seven people rehearsing their monologues for their DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
And the most joyful days at work, like I did a QI record, and it's the first record I'd done with Sandy Tosfiga mm-hmm, as yeah. host. And oh my God, it was so wow. joyful. And it was myself and Alan Davies, who's really lovely, and he always yes ands and jumps in on stuff that yeah, you yeah. say. So most of what he says is reactions to what other people say. And then myself, randomly Corey from Slipknot, one of the lead singers from Slipknot, who's been obsessed with QI.
On QI, really?
Yes.
Oh,
and
there
was, he got on because it was a Facebook petition.
Did
get
he still
Corey
wear a
Slipknot.
Leather balaclava?
No, he was so toned, so fit, so cool and nice.
Had
and
a pencil
funny.
In the stomach.
Yeah, and was making everyone flat white.
Oh, that's amazing.
And Ross Noble. And it was just such a joyful, everyone is just throwing stuff in the air. And you have those on ones you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
And that's a way to live a life, isn't it? Just mm-hmm. to listen and respond and laugh. Like that's,
yeah, well,
the joyful ones.
You're absolutely right. And I think that there's...
But I've had some doozies as well where people are trying to slam down and make their own things. And you're like, oh, this yeah. is not...
No, that's
pity,
that,
well,
and that's exactly the type of... I think comedy is, because you do it on your own, mostly, and you're really like, it's, if people like you, it's because of you. You're not hiding yeah. behind a script or a concept, or unless you're a character comic, I suppose.
Yeah.
That there is this insecurity where you have to, no one wants to be the least funniest person on the bill, really.
But if that mindset's even in your head going in, you're in a different, I think, comedy community.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've died on my arse on gigs where my friends have done really well, and it's more like, oh God, it was great because they could see what I did wrong and give me some notes afterwards.
But you are fearless. What I was going to say earlier
oh,
was
I'm
that
not. That's not
well,
good,
or no. you're very the actress in you is good at hiding it, because I saw you at a new material night. Now I'll go up and I'll have, when I'm doing brand, like literally first time ever material, I'll just say some bits, and if they don't work, I'll sort of maybe reference them, which people always say you should do, but that's just who I am, you know. But you got up on stage and just talked, and it was like you were finding the routine as you spoke.
Yeah,
and
but
I
that's
like,
my
wow.
writing process, which is awful, an awful way
well,
to live your life. Because remember, I spent the whole day worrying and going, why have I only, oh my God, what have I done? Why have I cleaned the kitchen when I had an hour to write? Oh, I'll go to this gig, I'll just speak.
Yeah, like, well, it works. Because even if the, and I'm only talking about a new material now, I'm not talking about when the show is honed. But even if, say, you don't get, you know, a laugh every 15 seconds or something, the confidence and the performance makes people feel so comfortable that they're
See,
just
I
listening
think,
anyway.
It's a double-edged sword, because I speak so much, there's no time to hear the silence or the laughter, so I just
but
barrel
that's a good
through.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, for new material, yes.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
barrel through talking, because I've got this fear, if I stop and leave a pause, then I'll hear the silence. Mm-hmm. So instead I'm like, no time to laugh, you can laugh at the end, I'll just keep going. But actually, when I have, in inverted commas, honed my stuff, the note is always, slow it down, you don't give people a chance to understand what you've just said.
Has anyone ever measured how many words per minute you say?
No, I don't think anyone has a clock. And it's also, I find it really
clock.
Hard. Yeah, a word clock, which is how you measure things, not on
well,
a
like a bouncer, you know, with the little clicker.
Oh, the little egg, like Disney movies.
Yeah, like going every
oh,
word
yeah.
you say.
I'd say no, but I might try and see if we can find someone. Maybe I'd be like accidentally making the Guinness World Records, and I'd be like one of those rappers who goes, now again, nowadays everybody want to talk like that, some say, but nothing comes out when you move your lips, just a bunch of gibberish.
See, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can actually do it. Maybe you should enter that competition.
But it comes
as well.
From an inner fear of the silence, which is another reason lots of people talk. Like when people come out onto stage and go, how's it going? You all right? And then they do a gag. Didn't think you liked that. Next gag. I'm like, oh my God, how brave. Oh my
really?
God, imagine being that silent.
You're not going, yeah. God, I could have done 17 gags by now.
Not 17 gags. I could have. I find it very hard, which I suppose evident if you're listening to this podcast, to say something in one sentence. I can't get it. It takes three when the explanation takes one.
I don't want to be dismissive of people with genuine mental health problems.
Thank you very much.
But there is a slight manicness to your ability to talk, like the amount of the volume, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like I've... In a way, I wish I could do that, because sometimes I listen back to my podcast and I think, why am I so laid back?
It's so much easier to listen to. Because in my head, I'm freaking out. Because when I was listening to you in the other room, because you told me to arrive at 10 and I didn't realise I wouldn't actually do anything until 11:40, bloody fuck.
another little jibe.
God, if only I had my agent here, I could have popped across the road to the hotel I was supposed to stay in. But yeah. I was, and it's
if you
so
look across the road, you don't want to stay anywhere over there.
To, what's it called? Bendy House or yeah. something. So I was listening to you, and you've got a lovely quality to your voice, and pace when you're walking around is so much nicer to listen to mm-hmm. than kind of like breakfast radio voice with Ashley, yeah. where you speak loud and blah blah blah. Here's Lady Gaga.
Who likes
17th
that?
Time. Nobody. That's what I think.
I mean, I never listened to radio or until podcasts. I mean, I occasionally listen to Radio 2, Radio 4 or something, but now podcasts are around where the people that are good at it, where they have really good conversation that's very in flowing and equal. Some podcasts, it's the presenter doing way too much of the talking and you're like, hang on, I want to hear the guest.
Yeah.
But just so before we wrap it up, because I could actually, I wish I got you in earlier, and I know you do because you got here earlier.
No, I got through a load of emails outside. It was
good. What have you got coming up? What can we expect
to
see?
Well, speaking of TV, I'm in The Fall, which is a random one for me, which is that Jamie Dornan, Gillian Anderson murder show.
Is this the second series or the third series?
Third, yeah. And the final series as well. So it's the final one.
You're ending the series.
Basically, once I went in there, they're like, oh, Jesus,
I can't do this anymore.
Who brought her in? I kept on making jokes.
Are you comic relief in it, or is this a serious role for you?
This is a serious role.
Oh, good. Did you enjoy it?
I never thought I'd end up in comedy. So it's me going back to what I thought I'd be doing out of drama school.
Back to the day job.
Yeah, back to my day job. And then I'm going to China and Malaysia in 2 weeks' time to do Tom Basden's new show about gap years called Foreign Bodies. And I think I'm 43 years older than everyone else in the cast. Just myself and Tim Key being like, oh, I remember my first acting job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you, Tim Key, anyone else we may know?
I don't. The others are all quite young 22-year-old actors who I think are very famous in America and on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
But
is it one of these co-pro sort of American and UK
type
things?
No, but because of the nature of it, it's gap years and two British guys travelling around on their gap year. Mm-hmm. You've got the great opportunity to bring in a lot of like American actresses and people who would be there anyways.
Yeah. That sounds like an amazing job.
Yeah, it should be fun actually. China and Malaysia, and for 3 weeks to kind of travel around and stuff.
And
so
Tom Basden's
nice.
A brilliant writer.
Yeah,
are the scripts
very good,
good?
Fun. He's got they're great. Yeah, they're really, really good. And he's managed to make something young without it being like, Ute, Snapchat, you know.
What channel is it?
E4.
E4. So it's still...
It's youth, but it's actually, it feels very fun and good. And I'm in it. So as a sort of, I'm the old storyteller.
Yeah. So are you doing dramatic acting in this one?
I mean, it's a dramatic comedy.
Yeah.
They'll tell me to be funny, but I have now lost the ability and I will only be doing drama from now on.
Even in your tours?
Even in my tours.
Hour long dramatic
They're
monologues.
They're going to be TED Talks now, just so you know.
Do you have any tours or live shows coming up?
Lots of live gigs, but no, I'm not touring anytime soon. I want to put together, I've never done a tour. I've toured around, but I've never done a tour. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever had a show. It's like a very lonely thing. I mean, I'm sure you know when you go on tour. And if you don't have a show that's your baby, it's a lonely existence to travel around the country on your own.
I did it last autumn. I decided to cut costs. I don't know why I did this and not have a support act because I had enough material
to do
two 45s. And about 3 days... It's my favourite show I've ever written and toured and done. And 3 days in, I was like, God, this is a bit depressing.
It's not. It's basically what I've had to learn, especially from last year. I kind of like worked a lot and didn't live a lot. And what I've learned is that's no way to exist because it actually starts affecting your comedy. Mm-hmm. So if you are touring around lonely, it'll affect how excited you are to go on stage. So you really have to have a baby of a show you love and make sure you've got a support network for yourself. I think it's the same if you work on your own in any job. Mm-hmm. But you should make sure you have a balance because at the end of the day, when you die, no one will say, she really gigged a lot.
They might.
Yeah.
We never fucking saw her.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know. Could you make sure they don't say that?
Okay, I'll try.
I have a feeling I'll die before you.
Wow. Yeah. What a morbid way to end.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, we normally do a guilty pleasure section, but A, we've run out of time, and B, you said, and I want you to say this as pithily as possible, is that possible? As economically as possible, why you don't have a guilty pleasure?
I don't have guilt about any of the music I like, mm-hmm. because it's all shite.
So then surely you have an embarrassment of riches.
No, I'm not ashamed because it's been too long. Like, if I was ashamed, it'd be the same as being ashamed of, like, my own face at this stage. You're like, well, this is what I... That's I remember enough, I got into the car of, with my friend. All right, Dan, chill out. Got a girlfriend. Oh, well, you've got a giant boner, Dan.
shit, there's no way of me disputing that.
I love that this is a film.
Yeah.
I got into the car with my friend, Sharon Horrigan, actually. Got into the car with her.
Name
and
dropper.
Her little name dropper, and she was, I had to sit in the back because her brother was at the front, sit in the back with her 10-year-old daughter, and the radio came on. She's like, oh, sorry about this music. Sivy, who's a daughter, is really into this shite, and before she could say shite music, myself and Sive were already singing loudly, been around the world, don't speak the language, but your booty don't need explaining, talk dirty to me, like, that's my,
okay,
myself and 10-year-old girls, that's what
I
we
I can
like.
Now safely say I'm very pleased you didn't pick a guilty pleasure film.
But it does. Myself and my sister just watched Miss Congeniality over and over again.
Oh, well, there
again.
You go. You
but we're not guilty
that.
About it. Okay. I don't feel guilty. Okay. I think it's a very solid rom-com.
Yeah, no,
Sandra Bullock,
it
but
is,
in a tour de force yeah. performance.
Okay, well, you did pick a song for us.
Oh, which one did you... I picked two. Which one did you
We went from the we went for the Dropkick Murphys. Because I like what you said
you?
About it, yeah.
It's one of those ones that people go, oh, never pick the Dropkick Murphys, but there's something about... And they're not Irish. They're what you're talking about, the New York. They're like Boston Irish, who are like fighting Irish type of guys.
And this is from the film The Departed, set in Boston.
Exactly. And this is a bit guilty because it is a bit Diddly Eye.
And it is a bit mashup.
Part.
It's like Diddly Eye meets New Metal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a bit odd.
So
but
true.
I like
like
it.
Me on QI.
Yeah.
With a from
you
Slipknot.
Are, yeah, exactly. You and Slipknot, man.
Yeah.
All right, well, Ashton, it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan.
Good luck with all your projects.
Well, I'm delighted to have been on because I needed the money, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's important. Is there no... What do you mean? The producer's saying
it. He's doing a big cross.
What?
Along his neck. this is... I'm shipping up to Boston from the film The Departed. Thank you, Aisling. Thank you, listeners.